17 seconds and counting. Guidance internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on. 5, 4, 3, 2. All engines running.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are willing to control, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. AJ at a descent. Air control mode, auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm on. 413 is in.
We stop to get down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This is Cosmic Perspective Radio. I'm your host, Andy Paneros. NASA's Orion spacecraft is being built to take humans farther into space than they've ever gone before, to an asteroid in Mars. Here today with me on Cosmic Perspective Radio to discuss this one-of-a-kind spacecraft is NASA astronaut Colonel Rex Walheim, veteran of three space shuttle flights, including the final space shuttle mission, STS-135. Colonel Walheim, thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
I can tell you that it was very exciting for me to be at Kennedy Space Center in December to watch the launch and follow the Orion EFT-1 mission.
Sure it was.
Yeah.
It seemed like we turned a corner there. It was really great to see us flying again.
Some of our listeners may not be familiar with the Orion EFT-1 mission. Would you please explain to our listeners the mission from launch to splashdown?
It was two revolutions around the Earth, and so it was built to test some of the most critical systems on the Orion spacecraft, the heat shield, the attitude control system, the parachute system, the things we really want to test out and make sure they're working as we continue on to design the Orion spacecraft. As you know, the Orion is built to go into deep space. It's the first deep space vehicle we built in many years to go beyond low Earth orbit, to go past the moon, to an asteroid, even to Mars someday. And so we really have to test it along the way to make sure the key systems are working properly. And so that's why we designed this test to go around the world twice, kick it up to about 3,600 miles, you know, about 15 times higher than the space station even, and then bring it back down at a high speed to really test out the heat shield and then also test the recovery systems and also the people who are processing the vehicle and also picking it up in the ocean to make sure that they know how to do their jobs too.
What kind of temperatures does the Orion capsule's heat shield experience during reentry?
Yes, I believe the heat shield during reentry gets to about, I believe it was like almost 4,000 degrees, I think. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that's what I think. So very, very hot. And so we have a special heat shield that, you know, the space shuttle had tiles on the bottom of it because we would be able to reuse them and things. But when you get to these types of heats, you really can't use the same type of technology. So we use what's called an ablative heat shield. And by ablative, that means it burns away, actually. It causes the heat shield to burn away a little bit and dissipate that heat in that manner.
The EFT-1 mission capsule was retrieved from the Pacific and brought back to Kennedy Space Center. What are the results of the observations that were done on the capsule?
Sure. The heat shield looks good from what we've seen so far. They're in the process right now of really looking at it in a much closer manner to make sure there's no surprises. But so far, it looks really good. The flight overall was a tremendous success. You know, everything worked just remarkably well. But we did have some little hiccups, and one area was in our uprighting system, our crew module uprighting system. We have these sometimes, but maybe 50% of the time, that the crew module can land, you know, belly first on the heat shield, but it can flip over and it's actually stable upside down. So if it ends up in that stable upside down configuration, you have these big balloons basically that fill up, and these bags or balloons will upright the crew module. And a couple of them didn't inflate like we expect them to. So we've been going through through the process of making sure we understand what caused that failure and making sure the next version doesn't have that failure mode. And so it's a minor one, but it was important to note those kinds of things.
And so the next mission, the next planned mission for Orion will also be an unmanned mission. Is that correct?
That's correct. The big difference for the next mission is the rocket that's launching it into space. So on EFT-1, this exploration flight test we did here in December, we launched on a Delta IV Heavy. That's a commercially available rocket. It's not the rocket we want to end up flying on because it doesn't have the power to get us, into deep space. But the next test is going to be on what's called the Space Launch System. And this is an enormous rocket on this, Saturn V quality type of vehicle. And it's going to be the first flight of Orion on top of the Space Launch System. And so we really want to test that combination with the rocket and the capsule. And this will give us the capacity to send the Orion capsule, albeit unmanned, all the way to the moon and to do a bunch of tests in the lunar vicinity. So it's going to be a really exciting mission. And we're looking at about the 2018 timeframe for that mission.
What's the lifting capability of the SLS rocket? We're comparing to the shuttle's SRBs or the Apollo Saturn V rocket.
Orion has the capability of launching in the baseline configuration of about 70 metric tons with the Space Launch System, I think, and then we're going to try to upgrade it over the years to maybe 105 or even more than that. So it kind of has an evolvable capability, but it will be, I believe, when its final configuration, be the most powerful rocket we've ever built.
And the development of the SLS rocket engine seems to be coming along.
So we're continuing the process and building the test portions of the rocket, and everything's going pretty well. We're learning stuff from there too, so it's going to be an interesting process to see that vehicle shape up.
I understand that the service module, which will be part of the lifeline of the Orion capsule, will be made by the European Space Agency.
That's correct. See, originally the plan was to have Lockheed Martin build the service module also, but we decided to take advantage of the partnership we've forged with the space station program and bring in ESA into the program and have them make the service module. And so they're in the process of making the service module for the next flight. This last flight we had in December, the service module was kind of an inert mock-up of one. We didn't really need it. But to go to the moon, we need a service module. And so for the very first flight, that'll be provided by the European Space Agency. So we're really excited about having them on board.
So I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the technology that was used for the ATV that was bringing supplies to the International Space Station is part of the technology used
for the service module. That's right. They're the baseline design from the ATV. They're using that knowledge and some of those designs to be incorporated right into the service module.
And my guess is there'll be some changes to the Orion capsule itself. I was reading where it had to be lightened up, and I'm sure there have to be several other changes for humans to eventually be in the capsule. And
you bet. So the Orion capsule that we launched in December didn't have the crew systems we need, the seats, the interfaces, the life support systems. And we're going to slowly add more and more of those on. Even the next flight won't have all of those systems. Hopefully have a little more than this last one. But, as you add all these systems and get it to the full-fledged vehicle you need for the Exploration Mission 2, which is in about the 2021 timeframe, it does get heavier. And so weight is always a challenge on programs like this. But we're making good progress on that front, I believe.
Exploration Mission 2 will be the first Orion manned mission. Is that correct?
Correct.
Will EM-2 be part of the asteroid redirect mission?
We still have to determine exactly what the mission is going to be for EM-2, for the first human mission. There's some competing demands. You want to, on your very first human mission, you want to do a slow build-up approach so that you don't do the most advanced things or the most ambitious things right off the bat. And so we're doing kind of trade studies right now to figure out exactly what the best mission profile is for that one, because we do want to do the asteroid retrieval mission, but whether we do it on the first mission, that would be pretty tough to pull off on the first mission. Not necessarily impossible, but it'd be biting off a lot to chew. So you'd be better off potentially doing a dress rehearsal or dress rehearsal portions of it before you do the actual asteroid retrieval mission.
Has NASA decided to actually go out to the asteroid and bring it back to Earth orbit? Whether they would send a spacecraft to just bring the asteroid back or part of it, or actually have humans go and bring it back.
Yes.
Has that been decided yet?
Yeah, I believe the latest philosophy is that we're going to go to maybe a larger asteroid and bring a piece of it back, because that may work out better. And then it also would allow for the vehicle that goes to bring the piece back to study a larger asteroid. In that case, not have to go to a smaller one that you can actually capture.
So that would be an unmanned mission.
Yeah, so the unmanned vehicle would go to the asteroid and retrieve potentially a large portion of it, or a big piece that we can bring back to lunar vicinity to have the Orion vehicle go up to it and sample it and study it.
Now, this would be the same capsule that someday we may go to Mars.
That's correct. Now, this capsule, the main thing for Orion is going to do is going to get you out of Earth orbit and basically get you off the Earth and get you back to the Earth. For these first missions is going to be used for about 21 days or so. If you want to go to a mission of the caliber of going to Mars, you know, that's going to be a couple-year mission potentially. And that volume is too small for just that. So you'd have to have some type of habitation module, too, in addition to the Orion when you want to go all the way to Mars and back. But the Orion vehicle will have the key role of taking you up from Earth and then back down to Earth. You know, it's a decent-sized capsule, but it's not a lot of space to live in for many, many months.
How many astronauts will the Orion capsule support?
We have a crew of up to four, and you know, that's flexible if we wanted to. You know, you can change the consumables and the amount of stuff you can carry if you carry fewer astronauts, but we're designing it, especially the first missions, to carry a crew of four.
Is the Orion capsule capable of actually going to the International Space Station and bringing astronauts there?
Yes, it is extensible to that, which means you can make some changes to it so they could do it. Basically, you'd have to get a docking ring and a docking system so you can dock with the space station, and then you could actually go to the space station and visit it. But you know, right now we're concentrating on doing that with our commercial crew vehicles, with the SpaceX and Boeing vehicles that are being built under the commercial crew program to ferry our astronauts to and from the space station. But one of the extensibility goals of Orion is that you have to have that as a backup. If we really wanted to someday switch courses and use it, it could be used for that.
I'd like to talk about NASA's plans for low Earth orbit missions. Right now, as well as you know, NASA's only means of going to the ISS is in a Russian Soyuz spacecraft. What are NASA's plans for a commercial spacecraft to go to the ISS?
The Orion program, you know, that allows us, like we talked about, to go to deep space, and that's, you know, the true exploration that you know, a government agency like NASA is really good at. You know, they're doing the areas where there's really not a business case necessarily for sending a commercial company to go out there and do that. Going back and forth to the space station, we've been doing that, you know, for many years now, and in low Earth orbit, we've been doing that for, you know, since the beginning of the space age. So we've developed that. It's still not easy by any means, but we have the technology pretty well down, and that's something we can hand over to the commercial sector. So that's what the commercial crew program is for, finding these companies that can take our astronauts to and from the space station. Because right now we rely on the Russians to take our astronauts to and from the space station with their Soyuz spacecraft, and they're very reliable partners, and it's working out very well. However, you know, we could be spending that money right here in the United States by having companies build similar type spacecraft that can take our astronauts to and from the space station. So that's what we're doing with commercial crew. So recently we led a contract called the Commercial Crew Transportation Capability Contract, where we actually picked two companies, Boeing and SpaceX, and each one of them are going to be making their own vehicles to go to the space station and bring our astronauts to and from them. And so we're in the process of building those, and we're hoping to get those going in the next couple of years or so, and that's really exciting too. So if a different solution is a different type of vehicle, and that's a vehicle that doesn't have to stay up very long because it goes up, you know, in a day or so, and it docks at the space station. Now, it stays quiescent for, you know, maybe 6 months at the space station where it's really not drawing any power or anything like that, or very little. And then it's activated and you come home in a day or so. So, you know, the total lifespan you're looking at for the vehicle has to be able to maintain around 6-7 days or something like that. Whereas Orion, you know, it's a more difficult challenge when you have a vehicle that has to last for, you know, 21 days, or obviously when you go in deep space, even longer than that.
I'd like to get back to Orion and Mars a little bit. The shortest trip to Mars with the technology we have today is about 32 months. Is that correct?
Right. I don't know exactly, but that sounds about right, because it's going to take you about anywhere from six to nine months to get there. But then once you get there, you know, you're out of phase for getting the Earth and Mars are out of phase for getting back there quickly. So you kind of have to wait, and you may as well explore the planet while you're doing that for several months. And then the trip back is going to be another 6 to 9 months. So the main things that that factor into that are the trips there and back, which are, you know, like I say, 6 to 9 months, and then your stay there while you wait for the Earth and Mars to line up again, so that you're not going all the way across the solar system to get back.
So my guess is we'd have to send supplies and vehicles and the living quarters and everything basically there before we actually got to Mars.
Yeah, you'd think so, especially they got to make sure they have the ride home and, you know, all the stuff that's going to get them off the surface and back into Mars orbit and things like that. So it will be logistics, but we're trying to keep that our footprint as small as possible because, as you know, it's very expensive to get stuff all the way to Mars. And so, but you would want a certain capability there or that you bring with you as you go so that you're able to sustain yourselves when you're on Mars.
My guess is also that maybe the vehicle that you'd need to return to the Earth would already be on Mars.
Potential, yes. It may just be the Mars departure stage or something that would get you up back into Mars orbit where maybe the Orion is still orbiting or with the habitation module or something like that. So the problem is if you bring all your fuel you need to get there and return on your inbound spacecraft, that's a lot of weight to get into Earth orbit. So if you can split some of that up and send your stage that takes you off of Mars and back into Martian orbit, you know, that would save a lot of weight. You just split up in different launches. So there's a lot of things we have to look at about that to see which is the most optimum way of doing all this.
Certainly seems to be a lot more challenging than going to the moon, even though the moon was very challenging in the
70s. Right, exactly. Yeah. Sure is. It's an order of magnitude harder. It's a lot farther, and it's a lot. It is a lot more complicated.
And at this point, it seems like there's no chance of maybe slingshotting around Mars and coming back. I guess that happens every so often.
You could do that. Yeah, it depends on when they line up and stuff. You could do that. But the question is if you spend all the effort to get all the way there, you know, and it does save you mass, obviously, because you don't have to have a lander necessarily in that case. So you could do that, you know, it's kind of like a free return. You just basically slingshot around Mars and you're only there for a few hours after this, you know, 6 to 9 month trip.
Well, these are very exciting times in space exploration. There are unmanned robotic missions and orbiters exploring Mars, step by step, paving the way for the Orion capsule to land humans on the surface. Very exciting times for the U.S. space program.
I agree. It is a really exciting time. You know, we've been in a transition since the end of the shuttle program, but things are really starting to heat up now, especially with the commercial crew companies starting to come online, and of course with the Exploration Flight Test 1 we had in December. And so we're turning that corner and starting to get back into the flying business, and it's really exciting. And there's some really, really neat things coming up ahead. But we really have to live up to our commitments. You know, when we retired the shuttle, we said we were going to build these new vehicles and the commercial crew vehicles, and we're doing that so far. But we're still going to have to all do our part and continue this process. Everything from we need the funding to we need the people to do all the engineering right and all the companies to perform well. And if we work together as a team, we have some really exciting times coming up ahead.
The Orion spacecraft will give us the flexibility to bring astronauts to the International Space Station, the Moon, an asteroid, Mars, and beyond. Colonel Wilhelm, thanks for taking the time from your busy schedule to be with us today.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Since my interview with Colonel Wilhelm in March, four NASA astronauts have been selected to train for Boeing's CST-100 and SpaceX's Dragon commercial crew programs. Suni Williams, Bob Behnken, Eric Boe, and Doug Hurley. For more information about NASA's Orion and commercial crew programs, go to nasa.gov. Cosmic Perspective Radio is an Andy Panaros production.